The views expressed on the following program are the views of the show's host and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station, their management, their donors, their underwriters, nor their seventh-born sons. You are listening to Free Radio Olympia. Yes, indeed. This is the Thunderbolt for May 22nd, 2020. We're airing some replays this week, which means there is absolutely nothing about COVID-19 in this week's show, which fact I'm thinking some listeners may appreciate by this point. So let's do this. Yes, kids, there you were, enjoying your privileged white status, blissfully ignorant of the fact that your shoes were manufactured by a child slave, until one day you turned on your radio and you were struck by the Thunderbolt! Hello, Cascadia! It's time to wake up! Yes, you better grab that cup of coffee, because you are about to be struck by the thunderbolt of truth and justice. Here it comes. Yes, kids. The thunderbolt is your guide to activism in Thurston County. I have news. I have commentary, I have a calendar for activist-related events, kick-ass music, and dumb jokes! So Cascadia is off of the couch and into the streets! It's time to save civilization from fiery apocalypse! Though even the apocalypse is gonna have to wait until I have had a cup of coffee! Very excited because for the first time this year, I have a whole brand new show for you kids. So here we go. So in the news, Pope Francis recently stated that if someone insulted his mother, then he, Pope Francis, was likely to punch that person in the nose. Now, he said this in the context of commenting about the Charlie Hebdo massacre, and he was making a metaphorical equivalence betwixt insulting someone's mother and insulting someone's religion. But that begs the question. Why hasn't someone insulted Pope Francis' mother yet, so that we can witness the spectacle of the infallible one punching someone in the nose? And this makes me wonder, is the Pope a jabber, or does he prefer a papal roundhouse? I looked into the Catholic Church a long time ago. And I felt as if I had stuck my hand into an overflowing spittoon. The Catholic Church is a major political economic powerhouse, and they pull all the same nasty crap that any other powerful and wealthy powerhouse pulls. But they commit their crimes under the mantle and moral authority of a freaking church, which in my mind makes their nastiness even exponentially worse. The state is what the state is. But a church is supposed to be something quite different. so I quickly withdrew my hand in disgust. I thoroughly washed it with a highly toxic, heavy-duty, industrial-strength, super-duper badass cleanser. And ever since, I have very studiously kept my hands as far away from the Catholic Church as is humanly possible in this world. When this new pope started doing his populist thing, my comment was that this represented a great leap forward, since it had appeared as if the Catholic Church was finally joining the 19th century. And since I knew that the central job requirement for becoming the pope is to sell your soul to a large number and to a wide variety of devils, my virginal hands never once strayed anywhere near this new pontifical personage, and I have never taken him seriously. However, since that time, it would seem that rather than spouting pretty rhetoric whilst simultaneously spending prodigious effort not doing anything, Francis instead seems to be making the lifting of the poor the central focus of his papacy. This guy is actually starting to interest me. Did the good guys manage to sneak one in through the back door or something? How's about we follow through on Harry Shearer's idea and stage a papal punch-out cage fight extravaganza with the contestants locked into the transparent bubble of the Pope-mobile? That would not only provide a thoroughly kick-ass venue, but in addition, the pontiff would be unable to take unfair advantage by having God smite his opponent with a lightning bolt or anything.
Guess it was too late for that idea.
I often use the phrase hoisted by their own petards. So I decided to find out what the hell that even means, and I could not have been more pleased by the results of my investigation. It turns out that the word petard comes from the Middle French péter, which means to break wind, or the expulsion of intestinal gas. However, during the Middle Ages, the name petard came to be attached to a small bomb that was used for blowing up gates and walls whilst breaching fortifications. Petardiers were deployed during the sieges of castles or fortified cities. The petard was a rather primitive and an exceedingly dangerous explosive device, which comprised a brass or iron bell-shaped device that was filled with gunpowder and affixed to a wooden base called an amadrier. This was then attached to a wall or gate using hooks and rings. The fuse was lit, and if successful, the resulting explosive force, concentrated at the target point, would blow a hole in the obstruction, allowing assault troops to enter. However, if a petard detonated prematurely, the petardier would be blown upward by the explosion. Thus, the petardier was literally hoisted by his own petard. Perfect. I can definitely think of a few people whose intestinal gas I would love to see prematurely detonate, such as Donald Trump. And there's never a dull minute with this guy. that Donald Trump has just advocated for banning all Muslim immigrants or refugees from the United States. That's not all. This dude is like bread and circus on steroids. The same idiot that advocates for a policy that is so off the charts outrageous on so many levels and is so profoundly wrong in so many ways. This same man is also the front runner for the Republican nomination for president. Donald Trump is a walking punchline to a very bad joke, but there he is. The only reason I can think of as to how he could possibly be there is because Donald Trump is effectively personifying America's right wing. He is supported by roughly 25% of Republican voters, which means around 6% of all registered voters, which is hardly a landslide. And Donald Trump basically represents the dying dinosaurs that are bitterly complaining about all of these upstart mammals. It is almost like Donald Trump was custom typecast for the role of lighting up the ugly American with neon and throwing the very worst and most reprehensible attributes of our racist and imperialist culture right into everyone's faces. He is appealing to a certain portion of the Republican Party, but he's totally freaking everyone else out, including many other Republicans. As if the Republican Party needed any more help in their grand implosion. But as for myself, I fall on the floor and I'm laughing. Stated goal of the American intervention into Syria was to defeat ISIS. What that means is that defeating ISIS may or may not have actually been one of their strategic goals.
Life's never been easy. Not today or any other. Times just keep on getting harder, sadder, and tougher.
But it is 99% guaranteed that they did have a lot of other, much darker strategic goals in mind as well. Most of which probably involved lots of guns and numerous bales of $100 bills.
So you've got a problem, a dirty job to do. Just look no further, I'm just the man for you.
Well, ISIS has been defeated. Yet the fighting rages on.
Way down south, by the river, is where you find him and the goods he'll deliver. No one knows where he's from or how long he's been a hype gun. You better heed my friendly warning, or you could be dead before the morning. You don't play unless you pay. So be ready to hear him say, give me more money, don't play no games. Give me more money, I'll throw you in the flame. Give me more money, don't tell me lies. Give me more money, or you will die.
And that's not all. The Pentagon has just announced that they are going to start stationing troops in Syria on a permanent basis.
You better run, you better hide. The bounty hunter is out tonight. There's a price.
This is an outrageous and exceedingly blatant violation.
You better hide.
of international law.
Is out tonight. There's a price.
But one of the many advantages bestowed upon the United States for being so exceptional is that we don't need to worry about laws. This immunity to law also more or less applies on only a slightly less extent to the European elites. And it for sure applies to Israel. Only dark-skinned people need worry on that front. And as for the Syrian people, they do have choices. Do they want plague? Or do they want cholera? Sophie, in fact, had a relatively easy choice compared to many that are currently being made by Syrian mothers. Within Syria these days, there are maybe 10 or 17 factions, most of whom are foreign, that are all fighting each other in various ever-shifting alliances. And virtually all of these forces are the bad guys. All of them, except for some of the Kurdish factions, are a bunch of psychopathic child killers. And all of them, except some of the Kurdish factions, are mass murdering civilians for tactical or perhaps even strategic reasons. The only good guys in this fight are some, but not all, of the Kurdish factions and the Syrian civilians. And the Syrian civilians are the only faction on the ground right now that has absolutely no say whatsoever in what is happening to their own country. And in spite of what the American propaganda machine tells you, Bashar al-Assad actually remains quite popular amongst his own people. And this is in spite of the fact that Bashar al-Assad is himself one of the leading murderers of the Syrian people. Evidently, Assad still seems a better choice to the Syrian people than any of the other available options, in spite of that fact. Would you like plague? Or would you prefer cholera? Since tens of thousands of Syrian civilians have been killed, and since over 6 million of them have been displaced from their homes, and since 4 million of those displaced are now living in foreign refugee camps, and since in many of those cases they are being treated like criminals, then I am thinking that the people of Syria are probably not very well pleased with current events. especially since the central cause of their woes, i.e. the United States of America, has just shut its own doors right into their desperate faces, adding even further shocking insults to already outrageous injury. And George W. Bush had to ask, why do they hate us? Ironically, while most Americans are completely ignorant of our own government's culpability in this state of affairs, the Syrian people know full well who has brought this catastrophe down upon their heads. I would be expecting some pretty serious blowback. This is the crime of capitalism. The only people who really should matter are the only people who don't matter. So this next segment was inspired by something I learned at the latest Media Island brunch with the Friends of Ugandan Safe Transport, which is a local organization that helps people with alternative sexual identities to escape from Uganda, where they are brutally and often fatally oppressed. But first, I want to set this up with the train of thought that was inspired by what I learned at the brunch. Just recently, I made a joke at the expense of some practitioners of a Middle Ages trade known as petardiers. Now, these were men who, during assaults upon fortified military positions, would place an incredibly dangerous explosive device known as a petard upon the gates or the walls of a fortress in an attempt to blow a hole in the fortifications. When the petard prematurely detonated, which evidently they were very wont to do, the petardier would be blown into the air. And thus the phrase, hoisted by his own petard, became popular. Especially after Shakespeare utilized the phrase in Hamlet. Now, as part of the joke, I associated their trade with the fact that the word petard originally derived from an ancient Greek word for the expulsion of intestinal gas. So, the aforementioned train of thought proceeded thusly. I got to wondering if I could be guilty of dehumanizing petardiers with my joke. And since, unlike some people, I tend to try to answer uncomfortable questions that I ask of myself, this led me to the realization that the mere fact that the phrase, hoisted by their own petard, became so popular, indicates that the dangers involved with practicing the art of the petardier were quite widely known. Meaning that unless they were performing the task under duress, as was surely the case in at least some cases, otherwise, this means that these petardiers could very likely have been very brave and selfless people who were willing to risk their all in order to advance a cause greater than their own. I'm also pretty sure that these admirable human beings would very likely fail to appreciate my joke had they ever had the opportunity to read it. Therefore, while I don't think I'll apologize to people many centuries dead, or to their descendants, even if their descendants are even aware of the fact that they have a hoisted petardiere in their woodpile, I do think that I will mitigate the dehumanizing factor a bit by explaining that petardieres were very likely very admirable and very brave human beings. Now, as for the Friends Ugandan Safe Transport, the thing I learned at the brunch was that their organization had originally been named the Friends Ugandan Underground Railroad. Now, I forget the details, which are largely irrelevant to the point I'm about to make anyway, but some organization objected to the Friends calling their organization the Underground Railroad. And so the Friends changed the name of their organization. Now, I didn't say anything at the time, but I thought that this was a bit too much, quote, correctness. The term Underground Railroad, Google it if you're not already familiar with it, has become a metaphor for helping people to escape persecution. One of the most honorable activities it is possible to engage in. And objecting to the Friends using the term to describe what they are doing carries the implication that there is something less than honorable about what the Friends are doing. The Friends are noted mostly for their desire for peace on Earth, so their instinctive reaction is to avoid friction with others, especially with their allies, and thus they change the name of their organization without much, if any, pushback. All I've got to say about that is they are lucky this decision was not left to me, because I'm pretty sure that I would not have backed down on that one quite so easily. And it's time to take a quick station break. We'll be back in just a minute. The views expressed on the Thunderbolt are my views, and no one else's. Those views do not necessarily reflect the views of any of the stations that air the Thunderbolt, nor anybody that has anything to do with any of those stations. And now, back to the Thunderbolt. We humans are very proud of our vaunted brains. Well, sometimes I think,
let's kick the beat,
that we are entirely too proud of our vaunted brains. Sometimes
the conga drums.
I think that our brains get too big for their britches.
Listen to the guitar.
It is the brain itself that is doing all of this vaunting, after all.
Listen to the rhythm track.
It is not difficult to understand how all of this comes about, though. With our famous brains, we can reason.
Bang us back.
We can plan. We can cooperate with each other. We can conduct cost-benefit analysis.
Africa, Mexico, Sicily, Tijuana, India, Osaka, Indonesia. Africa, Mexico, Sicily, Tijuana, India, Osaka, Indonesia. Africa, Mexico, Sicily,
and
Tijuana.
We can then share all of this knowledge with each other. Yay for brains! Well, when it comes to brains, I'll tell you what, you self-congratulatory lump of gelatinous goo. This week, the Thunderbolt not only proudly provides listeners with yet another example of yet another gelatinous goo, but we provide you with what is possibly a competing example of yet another gelatinous goo. For ladies and gentlemen, and various permutations thereof, the Thunderbolt presents to you the Slime Mold. Now, Slime Mold is that nasty, slimy, yellowish, greeny, weirdly colored stuff that thrives in the shadows of the rainforest floor. Slime mold lives off rotting vegetation, and slime mold has a smell that is very earthy. Now, slime mold is a living thing, but slime mold is not like the rest of us. It is not an animal. It is not a plant. Slime mold is neither bird nor reptile. It is not an insect. It is not a fungus. In addition, something that most humans don't know, but should know, is that for a long time, in our Earth's very early history, slime mold was not only the only higher life form on the whole planet, but the entire planet was in fact nearly covered in the stuff.
Welcome to Slime City.
And there are some who think that slime mold may soon rise again. Slime mold is a creepy, slimy organism that is made up of one single giant cell. Slime mold has no eyes. Slime mold has no mouth. It has no ears. It has no nervous system. Slime mold does not have a brain. But in spite of all this, slime mold can navigate. Slime mold can search and find oatmeal. Slime mold can make decisions. And slime mold can't even conduct risk assessments. And there are over 900 species of slime mold. And some of them have been around for over 500 million years, meaning that they are champion survivors. Well, according to a certain Dr. Audrey Dusudor of the Université de Toulouse in France, slime mold can also teach and learn from other slime mold. and they do this without brains. Watch your back, humanity. So it turns out that slime mold loves oatmeal. And it turns out that scientists who experiment and study slime mold always have a good supply of Quaker oats on hand. So Dr. Dusutor's team built a bridge and then placed some oatmeal on the other side of the bridge. Then, with some slime mold, they covered the bridge with salt, a known slime mold repellent. At first, the slime mold took forever to make its way across the bridge to the oatmeal. But each day it traveled a little bit faster, until within a few days, the slime mold had figured out the routine and began to cross the bridge as quickly as slime mold can travel, completely ignoring the salt. Then, Dr. Dusutor taught the other group of slime mold how to cross a bridge, but they did not subject them to the salt. The slime mold simply crossed the bridge and ate the oatmeal. When these naive slime mold were then suddenly subjected to a salt-encrusted bridge, their previous bridge-crossing experience meant doodly squat. They experienced exactly the same learning curve as the original slime mold had, or at first they took a long time to negotiate the salt-coated bridge, but within a few days, they also began ignoring the salt and going directly for the oats. Next, the scientists placed an experienced slime mold with a naive slime mold, because evidently, when you put two identical slime molds together, then they merge by forming veins between them, and they begin sharing something. They have not yet figured out exactly what the slime mold are sharing with each other, but after they have merged, the scientists can then subsequently unmerge them by cutting these veins, and then they become two independent slime molds once again. The scientists discovered that the naive slime mold that had merged with the experienced slime mold subsequently had no learning curve when it came to negotiating salt-coated bridges. Right out of the gate, they immediately began charging directly across the bridge to the oatmeal, and they completely ignored the salt. This means that not only can slime mold learn from experience, and not only can slime mold conduct a cost-benefit analysis concerning the cost of dealing with salt to the benefit of munching on oatmeal for dinner, but they can subsequently teach what they have learned to other slime mold through physical contact. But how can a creature with no brain and no sensory organs, how can such a creature learn or teach anything? How does an entity that consists of a single cell have a learning curve? By what mechanism does slime mold consider costs and benefits?
Before the land, before time, there was a time before land, when the world was just slime, and Krongoo was the brand. Yes, Krongoo green sludge was the popular item. There might have been better sludges, but no one ever tried them. Bought and sold by the platter, green slime by Krongoo. It was the most popular matter. It was the most popular hue. It was from sea to sea. It was from dawn to dark. It had thoroughly cornered all of the market. All other colors were in absentia. Back in BC, 10 zillion. There was no puce or magenta, or chartreuse or cerulean. No red, yellow, or blue. Well, to put it properly, there was green slime by Krongoo. It was a total monopoly.
So they have no idea how slime mold even communicate, much less how they share knowledge. But what this means is that there are other ways of sharing information that do not involve brains or eyes or indeed any senses of any kind. And personally, I think that is just as cool as hell.
And land started to pop up in dribs and drabs at a time. And creatures started to hop up from the oceans of slime. Krongoo's grip started slipping with this slew of innovations. There was now competition from some new corporations. Some tiny, some giant. Some could chirp, some could buzz. Rebellious or compliant, with scales, feathers, or fuzz. Some were stupid as turnips. Some were lowly as corals. Some had high-minded concepts, dreams and ideas and morals. Some were fanged, some were toothless. Some were sweet, some were salty. They were popular but useless. They were pretty but faulty. And in the land after time, and the time after land, they'll just roll out the slime into the most trusted brand. 'Cause before the land, before time, there was a time before land, when the world was just slime, and Krongoo was the brand. Yes, Krongoo green sludge was the popular item. There might have been better sludges, but no one ever tried them.
Slime me.
That's great!
Somebody help me! Somebody help me!
Shut up!
Welcome to Slime City.
It smells like a toilet full of nasty ass, okay?
And on that note, I'm going to end the news and commentary section for this week's show. There are some online activist events happening, but they always require that you log into some web page that has an address that is three lines long. And so promoting such things is really hard on the radio. So unless I come across some things that are easily promotable on the radio, then the weekly activist events calendar is on temporary suspension. And so I'll fill out the rest of the hour with music. This week's music section honors some true animals. Enjoy.
Big and dumb, they look so stupid, they aren't much fun. The cows aren't fun. They eat to grow, grow to die, die to be et at the hamburger fry. Cows well done. Nobody thunk it, nobody knew, no one imagined the great cow guru. Cows are one. He hid in the forest, read books with great zeal. He loved Che Guevara, a revolutionary veal. Cows say tongue. He spoke about justice, but nobody stirred. He felt like an outcast, alone in the herd. Cow doll drums. He mooed, we must fight, escape or we'll die. Cows gathered around, cause the stakes were so high. Bad cow pun. But then he was captured, stuffed into a crate, loaded onto a truck where he rode to his fate. Cows are bummed. He was a scrawny calf who looked rather woozy. No one suspected he was packing an Uzi. Cows with guns. They came with a needle a stick in his thigh. He kicked for the groin. He pissed in their eye. Cowell hung, knocked over a tractor and ran for the door. 6 gallons of gas flowed out on the floor. Run, cows, run. He picked up a bullhorn and jumped up on the hay. We are free-roving bovines. We run free today. We will fight for bovine freedom and hold our large heads high. We will run free with the buffalo or die. Cows with guns. Crashed the gate in a great stampede, tipped over milk truck, torched all the feed. Cows have fun. 60 police cars were piled in a heap, covered in cow pies, covered up deep. Much cow dung. Black smoke rising, darkening in the day. 12 burning McDonald's, have it your way. We will fight for bovine freedom and hold our large heads high. We will run free with the buffalo or die. Cows with guns. The president said, enough is enough. These uppity cattle, it's time to get tough. Cow dung flung. The newspapers gloated, folks sighed with relief. Tomorrow at noon, they would all be ground beef. Cows on buns. The cows were surrounded, they waited and prayed. They mooed their last moos, they chewed their last hay. Cows outgunned. The order was given to turn cows to whoppers, enforced by the might of 10,000 coppers. But on the horizon, surrounding the shoppers, came the deafening roar of chickens in choppers. We will fight for bovine freedom and hold our large heads high. We will run free with the buffalo or die. Oh, oh, oh. Cows with guns.
That was Cows with Guns from Dana Lyons. Before that was the Yogi Bear theme from Hanna-Barbera. And we started off with the Yogi Bear song from Hoyt Curtin. That's it for this week. We'll see you next week.
Thank you very much.